Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hey, welcome to Monday's podcast. Your boy Doug Gottlieb here. I will tell you why I'm giving the Patriots a bit of a pass on not having enough pass catchers. Plus, why LSU and Ohio State really want to be number one. It's not for those foam finger thingamajiggas. And what we learned about the San Francisco 49ers in their win in New Orleans. Let's get after it. Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show. Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from beautiful Southern California, where the rain has stopped and the sun is out, it's a breeze. It would feel like early fall for most of you. For us, we call this winter. Winter. Oh, we got a lot to talk about. Got a lot to talk about. In 15 minutes, I will iterate and reiterate. Some people only reiterate. I iterate things and I will reiterate. The real reason Ohio State and LSU so desperately want to be ranked number one. We'll get to that in a second. Niners appear to be real, huh? Rams not dead yet. There you go, Ramos. Chargers are doing what the Chargers do. Really out of the playoff contention now. Playing awesome football. Hey-o! It's Charger football. The Browns won, and then Baker Mayfield did what Baker Mayfield always does, interjected his own opinion about something he doesn't have to interject his own opinion about. The Browns are going to brown. But I'm super into the Patriots, who lost and did not get the benefit of officiating. Right? Now, you can tell me, they had to run a trick play, and they blocked another punt. Okay, they did, but the Patriots, despite being outclassed in terms of offensive weaponry, were right there with a chance to tie or win the game, right? Like, my own spidey sense is that Tom Brady could have thrown to Jacoby Myers, who was open for a split second, but Jacoby Myers has hands like... What's the guy Stonehands from Necessary Roughness? Don't throw it to Stonehands! So instead, he throws it to always reliable Julian Edelman, who was for a split second open, but what he should have done, which you should have done, man, was just stop. If he just stops, defender runs him over, almost posting up, you get the call, you get a first down with like a couple inches to spare, right? But I want to criticize Bill Belichick for not giving Tom Brady the weaponry. I want to sit here and go like, hey, even though he's done an amazing job with no defensive coordinator, reworking this team, reformulating this team, you know what I'm left with? I'm left with nothing but an incredible amount of respect from this perspective. They're going to have another shot to win it. They might have to go on the road to Baltimore to do it. And yeah, Tom Brady doesn't appear to have enough weapons at this point to pull it off. On the other hand, it also tells you just how hard it is to both win and do things the right way. Like, man, if they only had, I don't know, somebody like a Josh Gordon, they had him. They had to cut him. If they only had an Antonio Brown, they had him. They had to cut him. I know they trade away Josh Gordon, whatever, but it's essentially they got rid of him, right? And they never replaced Rob Gronkowski. Do you know how hard it is? That's I think, what today is about. Today is about, I'm not sure if people understand just how difficult it is. Antonio Brown was a complete pain in the ass. He literally had a story about him on some level every day he was a member of the Patriots. He was only there for like 2 weeks. And there was a new story about knucklehead Antonio Brown. And you know what? he'd still probably be on the team if it wasn't for the owner getting caught in a massage parlor in the last season, right? In the off-season story. And Josh Gordon, like, look, they only got Josh Gordon because of the litany of issues that had followed Josh Gordon. But it was one of those, we got to get, if he starts missing meetings, we can't have zero tolerance with Josh Gordon and then not have a zero tolerance with Josh Gordon just because we got to have a wide receiver. And we can be fairly critical of trying to replace Rob Gronkowski. But one, it wasn't like Gronk told them a long time ago, hey, I'm out after this date. You better find a way to replace me. And two, everybody's looking for the next Rob Gronkowski. Duh. It's really hard. Well, you know, why didn't you, you know, N'Keal Harry, one, he hasn't been healthy. Two, like, look, he's got a big body. But it's not like the Arizona State Sun Devils don't have a staff made up of former NFL guys who can go, hey, this guy, he's a pro. But either one, it takes a lot of time. Two, that offense is hard to learn. Three, he hadn't been healthy enough to even get the game reps out there anyway. There's an expression in basketball, and I think it works very, very well in football. It works in every sport. Winning is hard. Losing sucks. Winning is really, really hard. It just is. You know? Because you can do all the right things as an organization and put all the right resources into it. Invest all your scouts. Find me the best NFL talent wide receiver at the end of the first round. N'Keal Harry, not healthy and struggling to pick up what Tom Brady wants him to do. Very normal for rookie wide receivers. And if you go back over the past 2 years, like, dude, it's been a turnstile. They have, and you know what? Honestly, they missed on Emmanuel Sanders. Should have traded for Emmanuel Sanders. Instead, Mohamed Sanu, and Mohamed Sanu is over the hill. It ain't like they haven't tried. It's just hard. Everyone is actually trying to accomplish the same goal. Maybe here's the best way of putting it. We do this all the time with Nick Saban. We do it with Bill Belichick, right? Well, we go like, you know, you give Bill Belichick a week to prepare, 2 weeks to prepare. He's unbelievable. Well, yeah, but it's not like the other guy's not trying. It's not like any of these coaches, you know, like Andy Reid's going there and go, wait, they got Belichick and he's going to prepare for us? We're done. If 32 teams, and by now 32 teams, you may think they're not trying to, they're all trying to win. But even if it's 25 teams are trying to win, or 27 teams are trying to win, or whatever, I want to sit here and tell you that Belichick is having a great year. The makeup of the roster, not having a true defensive coordinator, working with his son and not having infighting about it. I want to tell you that he has had a bad season as GM, but has he? Yeah, it looks like they missed on Mohamed Sanu. The Niners got Emmanuel Sanders and a fifth-round pick for a third and a fourth. Should add him instead of the second-round pick for Mohamed Sanu. You do that, probably win a couple of these games. It's that simple. The margin is that close. But I want you to ask yourself this. When they did the Sanu trade, did you think it was smart? I did. Why? Because Mohamed Sanu is brilliant. Super bright guy. Got to be a really bright guy to survive in New England. You know, guy who's a former kind of quarterback guy as well, has that thinking brain. They misevaluated where he was in his career. And though Edelman's 34 and still able to navigate the league without, you know, breakaway speed, Sanu doesn't appear to be that guy. Can't get open. I defended him about Malcolm Butler because he did the right thing then. I'll defend him now with Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown because it's the right thing that you have to do. But I don't think people understand how hard it is to get rid of guys for the right reason when it hurts you in production. And with all of that said, there's still a missed call away or a fourth down completion away from tying and potentially beating the Kansas City Chiefs. I want to sit here and tell you it's over. It's a wrap. But either the Ravens or the Chiefs, or maybe the Ravens and the Chiefs, stand in their way of getting to a Super Bowl. And though it, and though we want to sit here and look at the final score of the Ravens game and say they can't beat them, if you watch that game, if Edelman doesn't fumble, they come back and take the lead. If you watched yesterday's game, you could think, yes, Kansas City was completely and thoroughly dominant, and the Patriots still had a chance late. I am not putting dirt on that grave, and I am telling you that it's this close. And while they're not as good offensively as either of those top two teams, it's not for lack of trying, and it's not for making poor decisions, with the exception of the Sanu deal. All right, that's my take. Let me get yours. 877-99 on Fox. 877-99 on Fox. Incredible game between the Saints and Niners yesterday. Tell you what we learned about the Niners, plus why the real reason LSU and Ohio State want to be number one, not just for those foam fingers. That's next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm telling you, for college football, the reason that LSU and Ohio State are haggling and have, you know, after the Big Ten championship, look at Ohio State. They got to be the number one team in the country. And after the SEC championship game, LSU's got to be the best. It's because of Clemson. I actually think if I'm Clemson, I take this as a massive amount of respect. It's like how I would take it. If somebody asked me if I was on steroids, you know, or if I had, if you ask a woman, if you're a woman and you're asked if you had plastic surgery and you did not, you remember that episode from Seinfeld? They're real and they're spectacular. That was what's her name who played Lois? Terry Hatcher, right? But what Terry Hatcher should have said is, like, that's the greatest compliment ever. You think that they're so perfect, they're real. That's a compliment. It's a compliment for Clemson to have Ohio State and LSU fight and haggle over who's number one. They don't care who's number one. What they care about is who gets to play Oklahoma instead of who gets to play Clemson. For the record, and I don't think it'll play out this way, I think Ohio State has been more dominant, but LSU deserves to be the number one team. Because Clemson has been every bit as dominant against an inferior schedule, with the exception, obviously, of the North Carolina game. But, like, how many years are we going to do this where we believe we try and talk bad about the SEC because maybe it gets overhyped? Maybe it does. Maybe it does. But they beat Texas at Texas. They beat Alabama at Alabama. And they basically beat the hell out of Georgia in the state of Georgia. Right? I mean, that schedule is ridiculous. To beat Florida and Auburn and Texas. And you can sit here and tell me Texas didn't turn out to be very good. But at that point in time in the year, they thought they were. And they weren't beaten up by the schedule. You know, you beat Texas at Texas, Bama at Bama. You beat A&M, Auburn, Florida, and you smoke Georgia in the dome. What are we doing here? Let's also remember when they beat Alabama, Tua played. Then you can talk bad about Alabama all you want. Tua Tagovailoa, if healthy, be the number one pick in the draft. So I would vote, if I had a vote, I would say LSU 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, and Oklahoma 4. And Oklahoma gets in just because you got to find a fourth team. I don't think they're great. I think they find a way. Don't think they're great. And I don't think anybody really argued me on that one. Now, as for the Niners, remember when we said we got to see something from Jimmy G? Right? The defense carries them. The run game carries them. We got to see something from Jimmy G. For most teams, it's about what Lamar Jackson and the Ravens did yesterday. Can you play well when you're not playing well? Can you win ugly, if you will? But to get down on the road several times and to keep coming back, 26 for 35, 4 touchdowns. I mean, it's been incredibly impressive. Hitting Emmanuel Sanders 7 times and Deebo Samuel and George Kittle and Raheem Mostert. Man, I feel like we went from the Niners being a team where, you know, they're really talented and they're really young and they're going to be good, but they played a soft schedule and it's hard to figure out just how good they are. The last 3 weeks, Packers at home, at the Ravens, at the Saints, they win 2 out of 3 and they were right there to beat the Ravens. And the way in which they beat the Saints in a shootout and Jimmy G kind of coming into his own, I can't think of a better way to cap off the 2-game road trip. They got Falcons, they got Rams. I don't know if they'll even have to play all their guys when they take on the Seahawks at the end of the season. Yes, the Rams appear to be some level of back and a high level of competitive, and their defense was phenomenal yesterday against Russell Wilson. But Green Bay, New Orleans, both have 3 losses, and they both have losses head-to-head with the San Francisco 49ers. Niners are they're 2 wins away from it being a wrap, 1 win away from it probably being a wrap. But more important than home field advantage is that Jimmy G came into his own yesterday. And where the defense didn't play well, the offense did. Can you play well when you're not playing well, or can you play well offensively when your defense isn't playing well? This is Kyle Shanahan, by the way, doing what smart people do. Smart people learn from their own mistakes. And I told you guys this a couple of weeks ago, and I tweeted this, and I've had a couple NFL assistants reach out to me and go, you know what, that's really, really a... That was a smart thing. And it's this, Kyle Shanahan should have a Super Bowl credit to his name. He should have Kyle Shanahan, offensive coordinator, Super Bowl champion, Atlanta Falcons. But I'm not sure he'd be nearly as good today if he hadn't lost that Super Bowl and the way in which they lost the Super Bowl. What did they, if they weren't playing great offense early in the year statistically, if they weren't focusing on Jimmy Garoppolo and letting him throw it all over the yard early in the season, why was that? Because he knows that in order to win in January and win in February, you got to be able to commit to running the football. It's what they didn't do with the Falcons. They're up 28-3. They simply run the football, commit to running it, kick a field goal when you can, but just not get behind the chains. You win the game, you win the Super Bowl. Who cares about style points? And that's why Jimmy G just looked like a guy early in the year. Because they wanted to establish that they can run it when everyone knows they're going to run it. Run it, play defense. Run it, play defense. And now, obviously, when they had to open it up, and when we had to see what they got under the hood, Jimmy G's got a little bit more than we might have thought.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
He's the original grind father. Grit and grind in Memphis. Former first team all-defense player in the NBA. He's Tony Allen. And he joins me in studio here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. All right, let's just dive right into Lee. All right. This year, there's a lot of discussion, but I'm watching last night, and Anthony Davis has 50.
50 big ones.
50. He's a Chicago guy, and he said, hey, Chicago produces the best basketball. We kind of laughed at him at first. You and I were recording a pod, and you started kind of going through the names, and we're like, there's a little stronger argument than I thought. What did you know that AD had this in him? Because it feels like LeBron has obviously brought out the best plus prime of his career. Did you know he had this in him?
Well, we looking at this great performance of 50 last night. LeBron James had already said he's going through Anthony Davis. We're going to go to Anthony Davis, and we need Anthony Davis to be our motor. And he's making good of that promise, what LeBron James wanted. And I can't say how impressed I am with him, because I always looked at Anthony Davis as a smooth, finesse kind of guy, you know, silky smooth, lanky, whatever, athletic. The other night when he had 50, I saw him just attacking. I think they started off small with him. They had Covington on him. I caught him a couple times. He had Covington on him. He just was aggressive the whole night. If you remember that spin move baseline.
Yep.
And that set the tone.
Yes.
That specific dunk set the tone for that 50, I believe. And I'm just enjoying watching him.
It's fascinating, though, because he said to start the year, like, I don't really like playing center.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden, they're at their best when they put Caruso in the lineup and he plays the five, right? Exactly. And it's like, hey, look, if you're going to play with LeBron, you're going to play the five, but it actually creates a mismatch for him so many times.
A lot of times it does, you know, in pick and roll situations, he's rolling hard. Anytime he roll that hard, you know, he's going to bring a crowd to him. But just his aggressive nature and seeking and destroying has been on his mind.
When you see the Clippers, now the Clippers, they don't always have Paul George, and they haven't always had Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, I you've been a part of a super team that was put together, right? When you were with the Celtics, you guys add KG to Paul Pierce. You also had Ray Allen, same offseason. How long did that team take before you were like, oh, okay, everything's clicking?
I didn't think it took long. See, and that's why I was telling you earlier that most of the guys, they sacrificed early. They said, yo, we have to come to some common ground where we all going to do something together if we're going to win together. They chose to shave their heads bald, you know, and I thought that itself, you know, made them figure out how the scoring load was going to go. You know, we all going to take turns at it. We all going to pitch at it. It's going to take us to do it by committee. Most of those guys averaged 20 points a game coming amongst each other. So just them having that respect for each other and love for the game and to sacrifice, I think that's what built it.
The Grindfather, Tony Allen, joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, Kobe has said you're the toughest guy to ever guard him. So, and you told me in the pod, you learned from James Posey early in your NBA career, you got to study film,
mm-hmm.
right? And you'd watch film, you'd take it home with you, and you watch it. So you know and you study all these guys.
Mm-hmm.
What's James Harden like? Because James Harden, he's going to try and draw fouls. He's got the complete green light. There's a volume of possessions that he's going to have the ball at the top of the key going ISO or going high ball screen. What's the James Harden experience like?
Well, considering the fact that on record I have been one of the guys who held him to 4 points, we can't say that. But I would have to say defending him in today's game, you have to just force this guy right and keep your hands to yourself, because if you put him anywhere in the facility of the ball, you're going to get a foul, and pray that your big can be in a good help cushion position so, you know, he wasn't get a straight drive to the lane. But ultimately, the way his game is being played right now, it's like it's on Turbo L1 PlayStation mode right now, because he's doing any and everything he wants out there. So, but if I could say how to defend them, let's just force them to the right hand as much as possible and just live with the result, because the things he's doing now is unstoppable.
What do you think of Luka?
Luka, here's a guy who's looking at the game at a whole different pace. He's playing at his own pace. He's not too rattled, you know. Second-year guy, you probably think he played with a lot of speed or whatever, but he's poised. He's seeing the game at a different speed, I say, because he's scoring on grown men. Like,
there's a little, you and I have talked about Paul Pierce, about how Paul could always get a step, and Paul is not like he doesn't have like a great first step in terms of blowing by you, but he just knew whether it's angles or how to use his body. And there's a little bit of that to Luka, right? Where they know how to use their body, they know how to create space.
Sneaky athleticism.
Right? Yeah. White guys are only sneaky athletes. Paul isn't a sneaky, like, you know, that Paul is probably the first black dude ever to be a sneaky athlete.
Yeah, I would agree.
But do you like it? Does the Luka thing, does that last?
I believe so, man. This kid, Euro experience, I mean, it's carried over in today's game. I like how he probes the pick and roll. I like his step back. He got a little swagger to him, and he's humble. So with all that being said, it makes me a fan of his. However, I want to see if this can continue. He's in obviously in the MVP race. But man, the kid is shining like a star right now.
All right, you and I discussed this on the pod. By the way, the All Ball podcast will drop out a little later this week. We went into kind of further detail. But for people who haven't yet downloaded, what's the difference in guarding Kobe and guarding LeBron?
Well, you know, I caught a whiff of LeBron early. I caught Mamba in his prime. So any difference, I would have to say, man, I just like Kobe's relentlessness. I see him not getting discouraged a lot of times when he went 0-7 and turned that into a 9-12 game. You know what I mean? When in other times I seen LeBron miss a couple shots or you know, get too much defensive pressure, you know. I seen him lay off the ball a little bit, go a little absent in the game. And I can say that because I've experienced playing him. However, it boils down to the pick and roll coverages. They both are electrifying in open court. They both could, you know, knock down shots. But if I can say anything, I would just have to say Kobe don't get discouraged at all. Like, it's not a shot that he don't.
And he's also maybe a little bit more skilled in terms of
whereas
LeBron is so big and so strong, and the way the NBA game is officiated now, he can play downhill and almost bully ball you. Whereas Kobe came up kind of end of Jordan generation, where they're still hand checking
footwork. His footwork. I mean the way he gets to his spots, and when he's in the post, he know how to maneuver down there as if he's a big. And I think comparing that to LeBron, I think at the time when I played him, I don't think he had a strong post game. I don't think his post game is too much to talk about as of today. But a lot of what we know about LeBron is he's taking off from the free throw line, dunking on you, strong, powerful. But for the most part, for his skill, he's getting better and better.
Yeah, and more of a passer. What about KD? Where does he fit in there? Because you faced KD and you guys shut him down in the Western Conference playoffs. You had that 5-21 game where you were in him. But he's his game, and you were just so physical with him that he didn't like that. That's always kind of been the Pat Beverly, who's, you know, half your size, tried to do the same thing to him last year. Just shot over him after the first couple games. What about KD in terms, and obviously this is all pre-injury stuff. Mm-hmm. Where does he fit in the pantheon of the great scorers?
Oh, man, he to me, he scores the most effortlessly. Like,
he's a cheat code.
Yeah, it's like,
I compared him to Kareem, and here's why. So Kareem had the sky hook. It was like unblockable, right? Whereas you have a 7-footer, however big KD is, who shoots a jump shot this high and almost behind his head. It's kind of an unblock. He's going to make it or miss it based upon everything before he catches, if you force him kind of off his spot, right? Because he gets to a spot, there's not a lot you can do.
No,
and that's a freak of nature thing.
No, whatsoever. But I just like the fact that, you know, he could give it to you in a variety of ways. His catch and shoot is like a layup. His fadeaway is turned into a layup. His one-legged shot is being something
kind of Dirk-esque.
Yeah, kind of Dirk-esque. Got the youth doing it all over the AAU circuit. He's shooting almost 90% from the free throw line, which is it's like you can't give him anything.
Most overrated dude you ever covered.
The most overrated dude I ever covered. Man. You put me on the spot.
I did. I set you up with about eight minutes of fluff.
Because I
know there's a guy or two you want to say. Guy would be like, this dude's a sign for what?
Yeah, and that's the thing. A lot of these guys, man, you know, they have great years. I mean, not even great years. It's like, They signing them off potential or somewhat.
Yes.
So, I would have to say probably Gary Harris, maybe.
Gary Harris.
It was kind of, I'm not saying it's to pick on him neither, because it was also early in his career. Yeah, he got early in his career. He got game. But the moment they start giving out those kind of contracts,
yes,
that was probably the first person.
Yeah, so I think
that.
That's what we as fans wonder. Like, as a fan, we wonder if a guy because I think fans, once they see how much a guy makes, we judge him differently. Are you guys the same? You're like in the locker room like, man, this dude signed for what?
I'm coming to get him. And not even coming to get him, but it made me just wake up like the league is changing now. Like I remember at one point you needed to average like at least 22 points to get one of those kind of deals.
Right.
Now it's like you could average 9 points and get $100 million. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he was one of the first guys I probably looked at and said, yo, he get 180, they signed him for that. Then come turned out 2 years later, that's a little deal compared to the deals they're giving out.
So. All right, who's the toughest dude, like the most underrated guy? You're like, man, that dude is nice. I don't care what anybody says.
Oh, man. He's nice. No
yes. Yes. Somebody that guys don't think, like I actually think, and maybe speaking, like I think like Conley's a dude who signed for a ton of money. Obviously now his body's beaten up, but I thought he was a hell of a, he was really, really good. But he's a teammate, that doesn't count. You can't go with one of your teammates.
The most underrated yes. person in
yes.
the league?
Yes.
Man, that's hard. That's hard.
We have time limits in radio.
That's hard. With Malcolm Brogdon?
You go Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, because you wouldn't think he'd pop off.
I wouldn't.
As
I wouldn't
one
think,
of the
I, he doesn't
most
seem-
consistent, solid guys in the league. So, yeah, I would say Malcolm Brogdon.
The grindfather himself, Tony Allen, and we hope to make him as much a regular part of this show as possible. Check out the All Bob podcast. T.A., you good?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm enjoying L.A., man.
Are you?
Yeah.
You an L.A. guy now? Like
I'm
from
starting
Chicago?
To be. I'm starting to be,
now
man.
You understand why all these guys are forcing their way to be traded
yeah,
out here?
Yeah, I'm starting to see now.
All right. Tony Allen. Thanks so much, Tony.
Much love.
Doug Gottlieb Show rolls on here on Fox Sports Radio. Steven Strasburg got paid. You want to talk about getting a bag? He got it. What's it mean for Garrett Cole? Find out next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Doug Gottlieb Show rolls on Fox Sports Radio. All right, so Strasburg is signed, sealed, and staying delivered with the Nationals. What's that mean for the rest of the league? That's part of Game Time.
Game Time!
This is Game Time.
It's Game Time.
On the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Dan Beyer, what do you have, my friend?
Doug, the game today is... All right, big deal, little deal, or no deal that Steven Strasburg is heading back to the Nationals on a 7-year, $245 million deal.
That's a big deal. That's a $275 million. That is a big-ass deal. Plus, it means that you'd think the Nats are out of the Garrett Cole race, and now it becomes Garrett Cole either to go to the Yankees or to go back home and play with the Angels.
We also found out that the Nationals probably weren't going to be able to re-sign Rendon and Strasburg, so that likely means Anthony Rendon's new team will be or will have a new team. Maybe the Dodgers, maybe the Rangers. We will have to see. Doug, a big deal, little deal, or no deal on a developing story in the National Football League that the Cincinnati Bengals today had no comment on an allegations that a Patriots official was videotaping their sidelines during yesterday's game in Cleveland.
So Adam Schefter just said the Patriots advanced scout was being filmed for a team feature. This feels like some form of miscommunication. That's what it feels like. So obviously somebody will be able to get that tape. Who was actually filming it? You know, why were they in? But you know, it appears that there may be an explanation. Is it a big deal? It's a huge deal because it's the Patriots, because of Spygate, because of the assumption that they skirt or don't even care about the rules. It is a huge deal.
Big deal, little deal, or no deal that Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield spoke about another teammate again, this time Odell Beckham Jr., and how the team's training staff handled his injury.
That's a big deal. Don't you think? Isn't that a huge, massive deal?
Yep.
I mean, he said, and it's not just that he said anything about, well, you know, Odell Beckham Jr.'s had an injury. He said his injury was mishandled. You know? So he threw the training staff under the bus. And then he said, it's not like I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus. But you did. Yes. I understand what he's trying to do. He's always trying to you know, show that he's putting his teammates first, that those guys matter to him, that it's not a, that he believes that's leadership. The problem is that there's just damage done, and you're one organization, and you don't have to tell everybody everything that you know.
Big deal, little deal, or no deal that the Houston Texans, well, really didn't show up yesterday in a 38-24 loss to the Denver Broncos. Trailed 31-3 and then 38-3 at one point.
Weirdest team ever, right? No show against the Ravens. Good the next 2 weeks, right? And beating the Patriots and beating the Colts, and then they no showed yesterday. Weird team.
Very, very weird team. Big deal, little deal, or no deal that Lane Kiffin is the new head football coach at Ole Miss.
That's a big deal. Did you guys hear the quote from Lane Kiffin at the press conference earlier today?
Yeah.
So Lane Kiffin landed, and at the tarmac, he's kissing babies and shaking hands. And he said, this is a lot better than my last tarmac experience, right? It's a great line. Phenomenal line. It's a big deal because he's been in the SEC before. He is a big name, and, you know, he was seen as a party boy for a long time. And, of course, now he's at Ole Miss.
Big deal, little deal, or no deal that LeBron James went straight to the locker room straight after getting his fourth foul with 2:27 left in the first half of last night's win over Minnesota.
Weird deal. Weird. That's a little deal. Because, again, there's probably a logical and reasonable explanation. That's just a weird deal.
Yeah, we knew that he wasn't going to check back into the game, but to go with 2:27 while the team is still out there. I don't know.
It was just odd.
Yeah.
Wasn't that one of the odder things you ever seen?
Yeah, all right, see you guys later. I'll see you when you guys get in here. Oh. Finally, Doug, big deal, little deal, or no
deal.
We
had to go.
Maybe big deal, little deal, or no deal that Megan Rapinoe was named Sports Illustrated Sports Person of the Year for 2019.
Why? Right? Why?
Won the Women's World Cup. Could be one of the reasons.
I know. I got it. Why? That's my. I think it's a little deal. You know, obviously they're owned by Maven now, a new owner. They've given it to a horse before. I know that she's taken a strong political stand and she's backed it up. I don't. Lamar Jackson should be Sports Person of the Year more so than Megan Rapinoe. People like myself. Didn't think long-term, still not sure long-term how that works out. He got the best team in the NFL. He's changing the league. I don't get the Megan Rapinoe thing.
That's game, huh?
Game time.
This is game time on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
All right, coming up next, Trent Dilfer joins the show. Speaking of the Ravens, what did we learn about them? And the Niners are officially for real, right? Find out next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
What up? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Man, hope you're having a great day. Hope you had a spectacular weekend. Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Discover Card. We treat you like you'd treat you. I coached 8 basketball games this weekend. My son played in 9. I'm beat. I'm good if I don't... watch a basketball game for a couple of days or two. It's 14 minutes stop clock. It go fast. Like, no, not when you see 5th and 6th graders play it sometimes. Anyway, Trent Dilfer will join us in a quick second. We got a great show for you. Really, really good show for you. Joel Klatt next hour. Matt Chatham will join us in 20 minutes, right? Former New England Patriot. Of course, he works for The Athletic. He's a 3-time Super Bowl champion. He'll give us his sense of what's wrong with the Patriots, how fixable is it, and then some of the calls that went against them during the game. And this newest allegation that one of their advanced scouts may have been filming the Bengals' play calls this past weekend in Cincinnati in prepping for their game. Lipscomb Academy, you can follow them on Twitter at LA Mustang FB, only high school football team in the country with a full-time nutritionist, academic coach, NFL strength coach, and the best high school weight room in the country, plus a barber shop and a 3,000-square-foot concert venue. That's how they got Trent Dilfer. He's joined Nicole enough to join us on the Doug Gottlieb Show, former Super Bowl champion quarterback, longtime NFL analyst. Let me start with that Patriots game. 4th-and-3, Brady tries to throw the ball to Julian Edelman instead of Jacoby Myers, who appeared to be open for the first down. Did Tom Brady make the right decision?
Yeah, it's a tricky one versus that cover. I call it casino blitz. You know, they're all in. It's cover zero, man across the board. You're trying to read two things at once with a free rusher coming. And I actually thought he made the right decision, and he flattened him out on the corner. I thought Julian Edelman actually could have bodied up more and shielded the defender from making a play. But
yeah, made him kind of made him go through him. Is that what you're talking about? Like,
yeah.
Like almost stop, make him go through him, and then go after the ball. And if you fall down, then you'll get the call.
Exactly. And I think he lost track. I think Julian thought he beat him so bad off the break that when Tom flattened him a little bit on the throw, he just kind of lost where the defender was at. And it was a really good play by the defender, too. But it's one of those that if he throws it underneath and tries to jam it in, then it's like, oh, look at Julian Edelman winning on the corner rounds. Those are really hard ones. That's not like a zone coverage where you're high-lowing a guy. I mean, that is literally processing that information in a split second, knowing you have a free rusher, somebody unaccounted for coming from somewhere. So I actually thought that was the right decision.
Okay, what about the Patriots' offensive ineptitude in general, though? You know, look, they were almost good enough to almost come back and tie or win that game. Are they going to have enough in January to get to the Super Bowl?
I mean, for the first time in a long time, it's hard to see that they do. They kind of seem like an almost offense. They almost get it done. They almost look good at times. They almost can run the ball. They almost finished drives. One of the worst red zone teams in football. I can't remember the last time I said that about a Tom Brady-led offense. So they're kind of an almost offense. And I think that would be okay if the defense was still locked down and dominant. But we've had two straight weeks now where the defense has showed some vulnerability. Not horrible yesterday by any stretch of the imagination, but giving up big plays. And you just can't. When you're trying to win with mediocre at best offense, you have to have spectacular defense and special teams. Just good or really good isn't enough in this modern-day football. So as I look at it, now there's always that back of your head where you're like, well, they're going to get better. They're going to get better. One of these young receivers is going to come on. They're going to use White more out of the backfield. You know, like there's something coming, but now this is quite a stretch where that offense has been brutal, so it's really hard to forecast them putting it together for a playoff run.
Okay, so is there any fix, right? Like, I mean, is there a fix for it?
Well, you know, they had two, you know, high-potent receivers in the building, Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown. Now, I think I agree with why they let them both go, but that was their plan. So they went in with the expectation that that was going to work. It didn't. They drafted Henry at Arizona State. We've seen that it's hard for young receivers to grasp this offense and be highly productive. No, I don't think there's a fix anytime soon. Maybe there's an off-season fix, but I don't see an in-season fix. Running the ball. I mean, if they're going to fix it, yep, it's going to be running the football and action passing off of it, and then getting a lead, getting a 17-6 lead, and then letting the defense be great. That's the fix, but that's easier said than done. Running the football without a dynamic passing game in the NFL is really difficult. It's also very difficult without an inline dominant tight end blocker. So that's the thing we never talk enough about, is when teams need to run the football, usually point to the tight end.
Right.
And that guy is a sixth offensive lineman as well as a threat in the passing game, and they don't have that.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, because Niners fans got super mad at me. Because they've seen video of George Kittle blocking, and they're like, and I said, like, look, he's a great athlete who blocks, but he's not the best. And you tell me if I'm wrong, but this is what GMs have told me. Like, look, the best blocking tight ends in the league, you've never heard their names. You don't know, unless they're on your team, you don't know they exist. The difference is that Rob Gronkowski was what those guys are as a pass catcher, and then what the elite level blockers were as a blocker. Is that fair? Okay.
It's very fair. I do think the fan needs to know too, there's different types of tight end block. Like Gronk was so special because he was a knockback inline blocker. I mean, he could knock back a big old outside backer. He could knock back a defensive end. He could double team and, you know, tray block up to an inside guy. He could eliminate safeties and soft backers and then be a dominant pass catcher. There's also tight end Shannon Sharp was mine, who at the end of his career was not a great blocker, but he knew how to block in the zone game.
Right.
He knew how to get in the way of people. He understood blocking schemes, so he could what I call shadow block, where you just get up in front of the guy. You're not knocking him back, but you're shadow. George is maybe one of the best at that. George is a good blocker.
Right.
He's just not a knockback blocker.
Right. He gets out. He's a great athlete, and he gets out and he gets on linebackers yeah. quickly, and he gets the right
exactly.
angle.
Exactly. Exactly, and it's just two different ways. But that's why Gronk will go down, arguably, as one of the greatest tight ends that's ever played the game, because of his ability as an inline blocker to knock you back.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Trent Dilfer. What did we learn about the Ravens and their ability to hold off the Bills on the road yesterday?
I just think it's spectacular how they can play this style of football. They have not been overly productive on offense, but they've been awesome in critical moments. They've made plays. They get it done when it's ugly, and you know it's one of those plays. And I don't know how to describe this other way than you're watching the game, and everybody knows it's the most important play of the game. Like, I don't know why it's the most important play of the game, but you just know. You're sitting with a bunch of friends, like, okay, this is going to be the play, and they make it. They make it, especially with Lamar Jackson, but they're making it on defense, too. Or they make it on special teams. They're just one of those teams that has their best moments when they're most critical. I think that has a lot to do with their belief in their quarterback. I think it has a lot to do with the belief in who they are, their identity, offensively, defensively, and special teams. But winning these last two games against two dominant defenses
right.
Has been really, really impressive.
What about Josh Allen? You've told us before, hey, you talk about other quarterbacks, you know, it's a big third and six, right? And
yep, exactly.
Now look, he had a penalty that kept that drive alive on fourth down, but there was a third and four on his last drive and a third and eight, and I believe he was sacked and threw another one away. I don't know if it's a misread of coverage, but is that kind of what you're talking about with Josh Allen? Like, look, they've taught him to pick up, you know, half the field, read it, if not, run the football. That has a ceiling, though, and maybe did we see the ceiling yesterday?
In his development, again, I'm bullish on Josh Allen because of how fast he's growing up. I mean, I did not expect him to develop this quickly, and he's really developed quickly. But, yeah, there's still gaps. There's still those boundary-to-boundary reads in the situations you're talking about that he needs to grow more in. But to say, I mean, he's a kid that's gone from a project to he's a really high ceiling prospect. He's played a lot of good football this year. There are gaps and things he needs to get better at, and I think he'll identify those. But he's showing that he can grow rapidly. But yeah, if you're talking about the Bills this year for a Super Bowl contender, I think they have the defense. I think they have the makeup for it. But I do believe that will be their Achilles heel, is they're still too early in Josh's development for him to make that type of play to carry you through.
Trent Dilfer, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show. You can follow Lipscomb Academy on social media at LA Mustang FB. Only high school program in the country with a full-time nutritionist, NFL-caliber strength coach. Best high school weight room in the country, barbershop, 3,000-square-foot concert venue, coaching staff with 30-plus years of NFL playing experience and 85 years of college playing and coaching experience. Trent Dilfer, their head coach, and he joins us on Fox Sports Radio. How big was that win for the Niners? Not just in the win, but the way in which they won the game.
Massive. I just think the whole week, you know, to go to Baltimore and play in those brutal conditions, to have what I would call an impressive loss, then to stay in Florida, you're not with your family, you're fatigued, you just come off an emotional roller coaster, then you got to travel to New Orleans, one of the hardest places to play. You're obviously a shell of yourself physically, evident by how the defense played. And you just, you know, you get in a shootout, which hasn't been the Niners' M.O., and they show another dimension to them that, you know, their fastball all of a sudden went from 95 to 83 yesterday, meaning their defense, and yet their offense picks it up and can win a shootout. And then they do it in a one-minute end-of-the-game drive. They just showed so much grit and so many dimensions with their offense showing up, run, pass, special plays. I think they're the best team in football right now. When I look at them, because of their dimensions, because of, you know, how they've been kind of hardened by this little run here. Now, this could change, but if you were to do, I don't do power rankings, but if I were to do a power rankings, I'd put them number one.
Trent Dilfer joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, what about the Seahawks? We see what the Seahawks look like when Russell Wilson doesn't play well. Is this just a team too overly dependent on Russell Wilson to bail them out?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not down on them after last night. They kind of ran into a buzzsaw. They kind of got schemed a little bit. They are temperamental in their offensive line play still in the run game. So I think you can make the argument they depend maybe too much on Russell's magic to, oh, okay, we're not running it great tonight, he'll save us type mentality. But they also kind of have a cool formula. Like when they're playing well, it's a great formula, right? You run the football, high volume, your quarterback's magical, makes big plays in the passing game, they're vertical pass team. They're always going to play good defense. They're always going to be good on teams. To me, it was one of those losses where it's like, I really don't think any different of you. I think more of the Rams. The Seahawks are going to make some noise here. I mean, the NFC is going to be really interesting to follow with the Niners and the Seahawks playing Week 17. I think that's going to be one, you know, must-see TV.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it all depends on the seedings and how much the seedings are set, don't you? Because otherwise, will the Niners shut some of that down? That's my kind of only question. If you were the Browns, what would you do with Odell Beckham Jr.?
Man, I hate the player politicking with other coaches and other players that's, you know, been rumored that's happening. I've seen it happen with teammates. It's a bad deal in the locker room. It plays really bad in the locker room, as you can imagine. I'd probably sit them down and say, you're either all in or you out. Like, there can't be any halfway. It can't just be about you. What's made Belichick so incredibly successful, one of the things is that it's team above self. There's no individual that's more important than the next. And I think Odell doesn't come from that mindset. And if the Browns are going to turn this thing around in the future, they need more guys that buy into that philosophy. So if he's truly doing what's being reported that he's doing, that he's doing the post-game politics, as we called it, I'd let him go. Because as you can see, the NFL is not always about Willies and Joes and about the sizzle. It has to be about fit, chemistry, you know, all those different things. And obviously this hasn't been the best fit. You haven't heard Landry complaining. Landry's been more productive than Odell Beckham Jr. So at some point it becomes about the team, not about you.
Last thing, the Chiefs, is the run game so weak that it will keep them from winning a Super Bowl?
Yeah, the lack of knockback, I think, on both sides of the ball. They lack that physical edge up front on both sides of the ball. Now, they have the potential of it defensively. It just doesn't always show up. Offensively, they're more of a sideline-to-sideline type run game. And without that downhill physicality knockback, I really think it's going to be their limiting factor, because you can't smoke and mirror it and just put it on a gunslinger all the time. Ask Dan Marino. I mean, literally, if people are looking for a history lesson, just go back to the Miami Dolphins, Dan Marino. There was nobody better. There's nobody that could carve you up more. There's nobody that made your jaw drop every week more than Dan Marino in that passing game to the Smurf. To those receivers. And it's deja vu watching the Kansas City Chiefs.
TD, Trent Dilfer. Trent, thanks so much for joining us. Have yourself a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you, buddy.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. One player in the NFL won't win the MVP, and he should, because nobody's more valuable than him. I'll tell you who it is next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Matt Chatham will join us in a second, three-time Super Bowl champion. An analyst for NESN, that's New England Sports Network. They cover the Pats. We'll get his take on the latest, what I think feels like a non-controversy, but it is a story regarding the Patriots and a camera and not their own football team. Look, I'm almost resigned to the idea that Lamar Jackson's going to win the MVP. Like, resigned to it. I don't think anybody if they looked you in the eye and go like, is Lamar Jackson the best quarterback in the NFL? Like, no. Is he even having the best season as a quarterback in the NFL? Like, no, not really. Right? Like, it's not crazy to say that. It's not blasphemy to say that. He's different. He's unique. But if we, like, what are we going by? We going by QBR? He's actually the top rated in terms of QBR quarterback in the league. Does have 28 touchdowns and only 6 interceptions. It's not, that's not even counting his ability to run the football. He's completing 66% of his passes, which is far higher than he did last year. And he's proving a lot of the doubters wrong. I will point out that Pat Mahomes' team did go into New England and get a win. Like Lamar Jackson, their big win, they beat New England. So did Pat Mahomes. He's got 21 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Now, if you want to go based upon stats and touchdowns, Lamar's right there. Right there. But he's not, you know, we're going based upon wins. Obviously, they're doing well. Look, he's going to win it. We've totally forgotten the fact Aaron Rodgers' team has only 3 losses on the year. He's thrown 23 touchdowns and only 2 interceptions in a new offense. And if you want to tell me that Lamar Jackson's a better quarterback, go ahead. Have fun on that island. He ain't. Doesn't matter. He's not. But Lamar Jackson's going to win the MVP because his team is playing great football. They're finding a way now, even when they're not prolific offensively. They get a lead, but not getting huge leads and holding on for wins. There's a value in that. Lamar Jackson is valuable because he has energized this team and because he has won games and because he has played well. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's not valuable. But I don't believe he's the most valuable player in the league, even if he's going to win it. Russell Wilson is the most valuable player in the league. Right? Like Russell Wilson, 26 touchdowns. Now he has 5 interceptions. He did not play great last night. I would actually tell you, I thought he played kind of poorly last night. And when he doesn't get it going, they're not a very good football team. Fair? Okay. When Lamar doesn't get it going, they still have a great defense, still have a great kicking game, still have a big-time running game. When Russell Wilson doesn't get it going, they just stink. He's the most valuable player. And I don't think Russell Wilson's the best quarterback in the NFL. Again, I think Aaron Rodgers is still better. By the way, Drew Brees showed himself to still have some stuff. But in terms of value, what you bring to a team, how important your success parallels the team's success, you can't go wrong with Russ. Lamar Jackson will win the MVP. Why? Because we've all bought into the narrative and because there is some reality to it and his team continues to win. He's not having the best season. He's not the best quarterback. And he's also not the most valuable. That's Russell Wilson. He's having a really good season. He's really valuable. His team's playing great. Right? And all of these things combined with the narrative of everybody thought Lamar Jackson was going to stink. We're going to play wide receiver, which is like one scout asked him to run routes as a wide receiver. Which, by the way, he ended up lining up as a wide receiver last year with the Ravens. You guys remember that? I'm sorry, he wasn't a wide receiver. He was a quarterback who was lined up out wide next to other wide receivers, but not as a wide receiver because that would be offensive.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's ask Matt Chatham, 3-time Super Bowl champion, writes for The Athletic, works for Nesson, also a host of the Razor Show podcast on The Athletic. I want to get to the actual game, the calls, the stuff that matters. But what's your reaction to this story that Cincinnati is complaining because they think the Patriots were filming their play calls?
It's funny, Doug. It was hilarious when I first heard it because it's sort of like this litmus test to figure out
you know, who in an audience that would hear that would understand that there haven't been signals on NFL sidelines for a decade? Do people know that? Do they not know that? There's a helmet. There's a helmet audio signal. The calls come in through helmets to both the middle linebacker and quarterback. And the other ridiculous part to this that, I don't know, maybe people don't know this, but there were 68,000 people at Gillette yesterday. There's probably 300 media members sitting up there alongside of me. Every single one of us can take out our cell phone and record the sideline for 3 hours if you got the memory on your phone to do so. It's stupid. I don't understand when that story got floated, what they possibly thought could have been the implications of doing so. It's nothing. It's silly.
Obviously, Zach Taylor, because it felt like a setup question, right?
Right, like he heard something crazy happened up there, but I'm busy coaching a game. I mean, that's reasonable.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the Pats. Before we get to the actual stuff that matters and the calls at the end, the call at the end of the game, which, as you tweeted out, didn't seem that hard, right? I saw the picture of where your foot was, and I kind of agree, like, this doesn't seem that hard to get, didn't feel like a call that was that hard to get right. But what about the Patriots' relative ineptitude offensively up until the fourth quarter?
Yeah, I would say their biggest football issue, independent of those crazy calls yesterday, would definitely be the red zone stuff. And it's been going on for, I think we're at like about a 4 or 5 week span here, where they, on their best weeks, they've been a 50% red zone team. On their worst weeks, there's been some 1 out of 3s and 1 out of 4s and 2 out of 5s kind of situations. And that's been their problem. The yards aren't terrible. It's not great, but that's not really what this team is. Efficient, win close games, move the ball, you know, win situationally. But they haven't been lighting up. We know that. But I think the idea that on a couple of those turnovers yesterday, they had great opportunities and didn't do enough with them, that's probably been their biggest problem. And I think yesterday was sort of a unique situation, Doug, to some of the problems they've been having offensively over the last few weeks, because there were so many struggles with protection. That really wasn't the story. Last week, or in the Dallas week in the monsoon, they actually blocked really well and ran the football well on that particular day. But this was a new problem, and not a good one. Not the kind of thing you want to carry forward for the next 3 weeks and into the playoffs. So they got to get that fixed. You need to be able to protect, or most of the other stuff is you know, beside the point.
How fixable are those issues?
It's a great question, because there's a lot of youth and uncertainty in those spots. I mean, the left tackle is Isaiah Wynn, their first rounder from a year ago that I know we were all very excited to see get to play. Really nice kid, tremendous at Georgia, looked great in the preseason games, just couldn't stay healthy. He got out there, played pretty strong his first couple of weeks, and he really struggled yesterday. And the bizarre thing on the other side is Marcus Cannon, longtime right tackle. You know, has been a Pro Bowl-ish kind of guy for many, many years. He's just sort of a rock for them, someone you don't think about, but he's been ill for a few weeks. And it was bizarre. He missed, you know, he missed virtually an entire week, went ahead and played sick. Then he came back last week, was on and off, didn't practice much, but he suited up and played and didn't have a great game. And then yesterday, it was just bizarre. They continue to list him with an illness. I've never seen an illness go that long, yet the guy keeps suiting up, and he just doesn't quite look himself. So, I mean, you're presumed that resolves itself in the next couple of weeks, hopefully not that long. Isaiah's got to learn and get up to speed quickly. He looks tremendous at moments, and he looks lost at others, and I think that maybe that's just a function of being young. The other issue they have going on is they're on their third center. So, I mean, if you look around the NFL, and we kind of do this every year, it's really easy to get caught up on some of the other stuff, but the offenses that do best have continuity up front. And you can look in some of the periods of time where the Patriots have had step-back years and either not won it or fallen short earlier than maybe the final deal. A lot of times it's issues there. So that would be the biggest concern to me, that they need to get back to sort of what we're used to seeing from that group.
What are your reasonable thoughts? Now, like, we kind of all calmed down now. Your reasonable thoughts in the officiating?
Oh, my reasonable thoughts in the officiating, it was the worst game I've ever seen live in my life, all levels, high school, college, NFL. I think the biggest issue was independent of which team it affected, because I think that colors people's perception or whether it's a big deal or not. Team A, Team B, doesn't matter. What was a bigger issue, and this is from a media member, just of watching it and, you know, other people I know in the stadium and, you know, fans that are out there with tickets, paid a lot of money for these things. I've never been involved with a game with so many stoppages. This game was, you know, a flag or a stop that would pull up the flag on just about 1 out of every 3 play pace. I've never seen it like that before. It was gross. It was perverse. It just didn't feel like a regular football game. It was like, good God, people, get it together. Don't call it. Just get it together. You know, and we did that. And that's independent of which team the call is going for. But there were three quarters of that until we got into that crazy sequence where the officials in about an eight-play span blew five calls. And we're not talking like, oh, should that or should not have been pass interference, those kind of discretionary things. We're talking they had an illegal hands of the face that was marked off for 5 yards, and that's a 10-yard penalty. I don't know how you missed that. They had a guy who scored a touchdown, and they called out of bounds. And the guy that was on the play was 5 feet from him. I mean, the picture I was taking right there, he's literally unobstructed, nothing to stop, and not too quick. It's right in front of you. It's white line, shoe, space between it. Can't get it. I don't understand how you screw that up. The other one was the review, which I think is even more ridiculous. They did the review on whether or not it was Kelsey had committed OPI and whether or not the spot was correct. The spot was off by a yard, relatively immaterial because it's going to be a first down either way, but that somehow they still managed to screw the spot up. That's not the biggest part, but the OPI language is clear. It's literally one sentence. It's not one of those sort of deep paragraphs where you kind of have some wiggle room. If you can't be blocking beyond a yard. So his body was at 2 yards and backed up and hit a person with his butt. I mean, there's no way around it. There's no wiggle room. There's a subjectivity to that. They blew that review as well. And then obviously we know there was the fumble that Kelsey had that it's this quick whistle thing, which drives me nuts. I mean, I think from games I've seen, you know, all around the NFL, we can go back 5, 6, 7 years of this where it seems every year there's a half dozen or more of these. And it just doesn't make sense to me why at this moment, sort of think of the inverse of how we handle the safety penalties. We're told, and the officials have been told throughout the league, that because that's sort of their top prerogative, in the event that you see a safety issue, throw it. It's okay to be wrong on the aggressive side.
Right,
now, I think the other side of that with this stuff, just don't.
For the most part, they don't, though. In fairness, for the most part, they don't blow a quick whistle, and it can be a little tedious because sometimes the ball is stripped and it's stripped late, and now we got to go to a replay or whatever. But yeah, I mean, look, I agree with you on the early whistle. So I would say just a hair late instead of a hair early. And in that particular case, it was way more than a hair early. Fair?
Yeah, I think you have to wait it out. I think ultimately, because you have this rule that prevents you from changing it if you do blow it, don't blow it. I mean, that's a great point.
That's a really, really valid point. That's a better point than the one I made, which is simply like, look, you have to be late because you can fix it if you're late. You can't fix it if you're early.
Yeah, correct. And I think one of the other things that came up, same idea, with kind of sort of knowing what the handcuffs are relative to the rules. And again, I don't like these on a lot of different levels. I think our 300 pager can be edited to half of it. As far as the rule book. I think what came up yesterday, and maybe this is a new issue, and maybe this is something that I think they could resolve in season. The idea that it isn't reviewable in the at the goal line unless it's called a touchdown.
Yeah, that's the mistake.
But if there's a dispute at the goal line, it should be reviewed whether or not he called it. And I think that's something that's fixable. That's quick. It's like, wait a minute, why would we unintentionally handcuff ourselves that way? We don't care one way or the other, correct? I mean, we would just like to get it right. Why does it have to be if he called it, we can review if he's correct? If he misses it, we can't review if he's correct. I would just say if there's a play at the line, disputed or not, of course we're going to look. And the crazy thing is you sit up there in the booth, fans sit up there at home, we all sit wherever we happen to be, and within somewhere between maybe 8 and 20 seconds, everyone in America knows if it was correct or not, yet the officials can't do that. I don't understand how that can be possible in today's age.
So I started today, Matt Chatham joining us, former Patriot, three-time Super Bowl champion. You got to get his podcast in The Athletic, the Razor Show podcast in The Athletic. He works for New England Sports Network, Nesson, as well. I started today, I wanted to say that they can't win it because they haven't made the right decisions, but then I stopped and I took a breath, and I said, like, look, they're, in spite of the fact that their offensive line struggled yesterday and their offense has not been clicking with him and his wide receivers, it's not for lack of trying. Like, Emmanuel Sanders seems to have more left in his tank than Mohamed Sanu. They went out and drafted a wide receiver who, you know, Arizona State's got a lot of NFL people in their coach's office. They swore by him, and he hasn't been healthy. Yeah, right. They haven't replaced Gronk. Good luck. You're not going to find another unicorn like Gronk. Like, he's kind of hard to replace. That's because he's a Hall of Damn Famer, right? And in spite of all this, they had a chance to win yesterday. They honestly could have beaten the Ravens if Edelman doesn't fumble. And they're going to be in the playoffs and still possibly get a playoff bye. It feels like this year, maybe more than any year, to me, it signifies just how hard it is to win. How there's one or two things – that could go your way, and some of them haven't gone their way. I don't have any less respect for what they're doing, or think I think it'll be a little bit harder to win a championship, but not impossible.
Yeah, I think the pieces could certainly be demonstrably better than they have been recently. I think Sanu's a great example. He comes in, he's a 10 catch, 14 target guy. Then he has the high ankle sprain. The reporting is it's going to be a multi-week thing. He comes after 1 week. So for the last 2 weeks, he's kind of just been out there blocking and not been a target. So in the Emmanuel Sanders example, Emmanuel missed multiple weeks there with a rib issue. So really, if you'd gone either of those directions, right, you're, you know, potentially losing the guy to injury. So, and Josh Gordon, conversely, the guy that they chose over that has gone to Seattle and really hasn't had a role. So, you know, that spot, it would be kind of a question mark one way or the other. The N'Keal Harry thing is interesting. I mean, obviously the big news thing with him was the touchdown not called yesterday, but it was his only rep. So, you know, if you want to project forward and we'll try to figure out how this might be better for them, obviously a healthy Sanu really changes things for them dramatically. So in his absence and then N'Keal's absence on even the field, well then, yeah, you're a little tight on weapons or whatever. So I just think it's there. You know, there's so many different things that would have to be answered, and you have to have a more consistent half of football defensively to keep an edit. The last thing I would say is the kicking. This has been sort of a secret, secret points thing for them this season, getting a kick blocked, you know, going for it on 4th and 7 on what would have been a 44 yarder. And that was basically, and that was following the blocked kick. I mean, those are 6 hidden points that I think most in the league are hitting on. And then those end of game decisions are entirely different. So you don't want to be making decisions like that in a playoff game. So for all those things would need to come together down the stretch.
Matt Chatham does a great job with The Athletic. Download his podcast, The Razor Show Podcast. He's a 3-time Super Bowl champion. Also a good follow on the bird. Matt, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Doug. Take care, bud.
Pleasure's mine. Will Clemson's easy schedule come back to hurt them in the playoff? Find out next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Every day at this time, the Doug Gottlieb Show, we like to get you caught up on something you may have heard earlier on Fox Sports Radio or Fox seen on Fox Sports 1, we call it.
And now.
What does the Fox say?
This was Urban Meyer and the Herd this morning talking about Clemson's easy schedule heading into the college football playoff.
I think it is. I think, you know, Ohio State fell behind by 14 points at halftime to Wisconsin. And Jonathan Taylor, a great running back, was having a day, ran for 150 yards. And Coach Day and Justin Field have never been in that situation. And to come back and fight, make the halftime adjustments, you know, that's a sign of a good staff, a good coach, and a great leader. So I think that gives them an advantage. The ACC is not good. The ACC is really struggling. You know, when your Miamis and Florida States and Louisville's aren't top 15 teams like they have in the past, and Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech's a team that, you know, that those are historically extremely strong programs. So ACC, when those teams are great, the ACC's great, but they're not.
Yeah, look, I think we all believe that the ACC isn't a great team, isn't a great conference. But we all think that Clemson's really good, and that Clemson, they were challenged by one team, like one game all year. The rest were not challenges, were not close, including Texas A&M, who was from the SEC. Granted, they play them at home. And South Carolina, who was from the SEC, who they dominated. Weren't challenged. And you have a quarterback who's won a national championship before, right? You have several players. You have a coaching staff. He's comparing it to Ryan Day, who hadn't called a play, hadn't made an adjustment on his own, you know, before this season. That's not Dabo Swinney. Dabo Swinney's been doing this for a decade and won 2 national championships. It ain't Justin Fields, who hadn't been there before. They got a quarterback who has, who's actually been there and done that. So I get what he's saying. And it's the old iron sharpens iron, right? But one, like, why do we think Wisconsin's so good? Wisconsin's not a great team. So it's not like they were lining up against the 85 Bears and getting pummeled and then figured it out at halftime. It's just not. And then two, we're comparing apples to oranges here. So Urban Meyer's not wrong at all in terms of the Big Ten being better and Ryan Day and Justin Fields figuring out. I would say, though, let's not compare incomparables. you can't compare to the experience that it's not just Dabo Swinney, but remember the experience that his quarterback has in these type of games. His quarterback has been there. His quarterback has done that, and that's not Justin Fields.
What does the Fox say?
And I'm telling you, like, that's the real reason that no one wants to be number two is because Clemson is that good. It's not because anybody really cares about number one versus two. A number one ranked team has never actually won the college football playoff, which is kind of interesting in and of itself. Why do you want to be ranked number one? Why do you want to be ranked number one? Because you want to play Oklahoma. Because Oklahoma, not great. Not close to the level of those other teams. And I'm a Big 12 guy, and I've been a defender of Big 12 teams in the past. I don't think this would be the year to stand, you know, stand up there, especially because I think Ohio State is that good this year. I think Clemson maybe is just, they have some inexperience on defense. And I think LSU is that good. They're outstanding. So, going to be a great college playoff no matter what. I'd like to criticize Bill Belichick. I'd like to hold his feet to the fire and say, look, bro, you screwed this stuff up. I don't think I would bro Bill Belichick. That'd be bad. I like, you screwed this stuff up. Listen here, sir, you grumpy old man. All right? Where are the receivers? Why aren't you better? I saw something yesterday which stuck out to me. Kind of gives him a pass. It's next to the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. The expression in sports, coaches you all the time, is winning is hard. What does it mean? Look, the Patriots, if you remember 2 years ago, right? 2 years ago when they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles, what did we say about their team? Do you remember? No playmakers on defense. They just don't. They no playmakers on defense. Remember that? It was like, They gave up 600 yards of offense in the Super Bowl to the Eagles. Does everybody, Eagles are playing on TV tonight. 2 years ago, they lost to the Eagles in the Super Bowl. They gave up 600 yards of offense. You guys remember that? And 2 years ago, we said, how could they win? They have no playmakers on defense. And they still had Tom Brady with the football down five, driving a chance to win before he made a bad decision. So this year we thought, man, Gronk retires. How do you replace Gronk? Well, I guess they'll have a power running game. Turns out Gronk hard to replace in that too. The offensive line has had some injuries and some issues. And the guys they've reached out to, or the guys they had as playmakers, Josh Gordon was a can't get right. And Antonio Brown was there for one game before his tweets, his direct messages, and just all his Antonio Brownness got him run off. You combine the fact that their owner got caught up in the massage parlor deal, so they probably have to keep it on the straight and narrow. And the New England Patriots had to be sitting there going, are you guys kidding me? Like, everyone is jumping ship from the Patriots. They are 10-3 on the season. The remaining schedule is as follows. They play the Bengals, it's a win. The Bills and the Dolphins. Worst case scenario, they're 12-4. Reasonable to believe they end up 13-3. Now, are they helped out by the schedule being soft? Sure. By the division sucking? Okay. But it's not for lack of trying. Like, they went out and got an Antonio Brown. They traded for a Mohamed Sanu. And it's kind of impossible to replace a guy like Rob Gronkowski. Rob Gronkowski is one of the better pass-catching tight ends in the history of the sport. I don't believe he's the best, but he's one of the better ones. Then you combine the fact that of those tight ends, he's far and away the best blocker. He's an all-time great. So, yeah, trying to replace him with Ben Watson and Matt Lacoste or Ryan Izzo is kind of hard in comparison. And in spite of what they've tried to do not working at tight end, in spite of what they tried to do at wide receiver not working, and in spite of their offensive line issues, they had the ball at the fourth and three with a chance to win the game. They had a touchdown taken away. And I can't help it but sit there and go, hey, you know, winning is hard. And I'd like to say that Belichick got greedy, Belichick got arrogant. You know, Belichick is trying to make Brady look bad. But I just think the difference between being the best team in the NFL and really, really close is one fourth down throw from Brady, which is a little too close to Edelman, and Edelman didn't stop on. One missed call or one bad decision in Mohamed Sanu instead of Emmanuel Sanders. They drafted a wide receiver in the first round. They already had Josh Gordon. They traded for Antonio Brown, and then they traded for Mohamed Sanu. What more do you want them to do? If it doesn't work out, it's not for lack of trying. It's not for lack of forethought. It's because winning is hard. The margin is that close. And, oh, yeah, by the way, it's not like you're playing against the course like in golf. You're playing against the course. An immovable object, one without emotions, one that's not trying to beat you. Somebody can trick up the golf course or make it easier, but the course itself does nothing to compete with you. In football, there's 53 other guys, 46 on game days, and a coaching staff, and their job is to figure out their deficiencies and overcome it and beat you. Winning is hard. Baker Mayfield needs to stop commenting on anything and everything. And Odell Beckham Jr. needs some accountability. The Browns continue to be the Browns. We discuss next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
The Browns. So they won and lost yesterday at the exact same time. Right? There's rumors out that that Odell Beckham Jr. is not all the way in, that he wants to be traded. Then after the game, Baker Mayfield had this to say.
Wasn't handled right. He's not able to run as well as he should be able to, as well as he knows, and that's frustrating for him. You can sense that's some of his frustration, where that comes from. So it wasn't handled the right way in our training room. So it is what it is. And so his not 100% is still good enough for us. I think he could have been addressed earlier on.
Wait, did he just say what I think he said? He said it wasn't handled right. Then he doubled down, said it wasn't handled right within our training room. And then he offered it should have been addressed. Like, you know, things you shouldn't comment on is, you know, somebody's wife, probably not a good idea. Somebody's God, how somebody spends their money, and somebody else's treatment plan. I understand that Baker's just trying to do what Baker always does, which is have the back of his teammates. That way they always have his back. But what are you doing here, dude? It wasn't handled right. One, these are the men and women that are paid to get guys healthy and back out in the field. You aren't a doctor. You don't actually know. And even if you're only relating what you've heard from OBJ, it's not like Baker Mayfield doesn't do press conferences often and hasn't received training and doesn't know. That ain't not only is not what you say, it's not the way in which you say it. That's the big thing. Hey, Odell hasn't been as healthy as he wants to be, but 80% of OBJ is better than 95% of the league. You say that, we're good, right? You say that, we're good. You just say he hasn't had the best year, but that's not on him, that's on us. That's not on him, that's on a nagging injury. But to now throw your own training room? What are we doing here? The same guy who said last week, and this is Odell Beckham, the guy whose back you have is the one who said, when asked if he wanted to be there next year, said, I don't know if I want to be here. I don't know if I want to be here now, which tells you he doesn't want to be there. I mean, look, the two things that get you most in trouble in my business, where you're paid to actually have opinions. Baker Mayfield is not paid to have an opinion. He can have one. He can not have one. It doesn't matter. Makes it more interesting when he does. But he does not pay to. In my business, you're paid to have an opinion. The two things that get you in trouble the most. You know what they are? One, when you say and. Right? When you make your point, you're prepared to make your point, you're good. And then we say and, you start rambling. That's when you misspeak or throw somebody under the bus you didn't mean to. Or you're like, I didn't even need to add that part. The other part is commenting on things that you don't need to comment on. That's what Baker's doing. What a mess. What a mess. Look, let me just cap off the Odell Beckham Jr. thing, okay? Everywhere he's gone, there's been an issue. And it's never his fault. It's the, you know, we pointed this out when it happened. He didn't go to OTAs. And you're like, well, he's not always on the same page as Baker Mayfield. Why do you think that might be? Had they worked together in OTAs, because they hadn't played together, it was a completely new system, maybe they would have had a better working relationship, correct? Doesn't mean they don't like each other, that they can't work together. It's just hard when you haven't had the hours upon hours upon hours of practicing and playing against one another. Right? So then, you know, he's there early, and now the story about him not being healthy, he's clearly, Baker Mayfield didn't come up with that on his own. Right? Baker Mayfield didn't come up with the, it wasn't handled right on his own. That's obviously from Odell Beckham Jr. On the same week in which he says, I don't know, God has a plan, don't know where I'm supposed to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sorry. At some point, we're going to have to realize that the Giants got rid of Odell Beckham Jr. after paying him a ton of money, and they feel better about it, even if they don't have as much talent. And the Browns, look, he's more talented than Jarvis Landry, but Jarvis Landry has figured out, like, hey, man, you start getting multiple stops in your passport, and you're going to – no one's saying the Browns are a great organization. And no one says you have to say the Browns are a great organization. All you can be is a businessman and say, hey, we're just here to keep trying to win and get better. Buy into the process. All the cliche stuff. But between planting seeds with Baker, planting seeds in the media that you might want to be traded, lobbying to other teams, that's the story out. These lobbying to other teams, come get me. Which Earl Thomas did. But Earl Thomas also wanted to go to the Cowboys. He ended up with the Ravens. He was very fortunate to get with the Ravens. Well, hey, dude, you're not careful. They'll send you to Football Siberia now. Oh, you know where I want to go? The Ravens and play with Lamar Jackson and get 3 balls a game? Is that what you want? That dude's not throwing a bunch of, like, the next step in the Lamar Jackson thing is going to be, you know, you'll never get a possession wide receiver. You get the tight ends because they got a huge target catch radius. And you get Hollywood Brown taking the top off of defense. But it's really hard to get the volume of catches in that style. Look, if you're Odell Beckham Jr., no one thinks you're with a well-coached team and a well-oiled machine and a well-run organization. Nobody's, but you got to stop with this. It's always somebody else's fault, even if it is. Especially when it is. That's when you go, no. That's the beauty of Sean McVay. Right? If you listen to Sean McVay, when they lose, Ramos, you listen to all these, John Ramos is a huge Rams fan. I've heard almost all his press conferences. When you listen to him and they lose, whose fault is it?
It's his fault, Doug.
Always his fault. When they win, who gets the credit?
Team gets the credit.
Team gets the credit. Todd Gurley's got a terrible contract and an arthritic knee. And McVay and their offensive line is not nearly as good as it was last year. And when people were harshly critical of him not giving him the ball, and then finally they gave him the ball 1 week, and he had a good week, he's like, it's because I was an idiot. No, it's not. No one thinks he's an idiot. Everybody thinks he's really, really bright. It's just hard to decide, like, all right, in September and October, do I give him the ball then when they don't have a good line and he might be beaten up by the time we get to the playoffs? Like, that's a hard thing. Now, I understand it's different when you're a coach, different when, but he's not that much older than Odell Beckham Jr., and Odell Beckham Jr. has been in the spotlight enough. He knows how this thing works. Now, he's a wide receiver, and they're generally allowed to get away with being complete idiots. But the it's my fault when things go bad and it's everybody else's fault when things go good is generally a better plan than it's everybody else's fault when things go bad. Yes, rhyme music.
This is a hot take theory, if you will. Odell Beckham Jr. to the Patriots in the offseason. I'll take your thoughts off the air. I'll hang up and listen. No, that's what it is.
Possible.
The Browns have said earlier today there was a report that the Browns are denying that they're in the process of trying to deal him or look for a future beyond Odell. But at least the Patriots were willing to take a risk on Antonio Brown. We know they've done this with plenty of players in the past, but the lack of playmakers continues to be an issue. Would Bill Belichick take a chance on him?
That's a great question. I think it depends on what the price is, but the answer is probably yes. Because he doesn't have what Antonio Brown had. It's the off the field, which I can't help you with, right? Yeah, I do think he would. Now, would the Browns trade him to the Patriots? They're in the AFC. He doesn't like he doesn't like Cleveland. Cleveland doesn't like him. I know it's a different organization. We should remember that the Cleveland Browns organization he coached for is the one in Baltimore now. Very important to point out. Because it's the same name, it's really easy to point out. Anyway, do I think he would? Yeah. I think he wants to get to LA, you know, or to Vegas and play for the Raiders. And because the Vegas thing is going to work with the Raiders. It just is. They're going to be sold out. It's going to be a thing. And I'm sure if you watch Hard Knocks and how much patience Gruden had for Antonio Brown, who's a colossal pain in the ass, you're like, look, he's not nearly as big a problem. OBJ's problem is he just kind of immature and wants the ball a ton. That's really kind of about it. It's classic, you know, is there some other stuff? Yeah, but it's just more he wants the ball and he wants to have fun.
This is Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports said that some of the teams that were initially a part of what Odell was seeking was 49ers or Rams.
Yeah, he's told everybody he wants to be West Coast, which is interesting because his brand, I think, was really helped by playing in New York. And people misperceive the LA thing. I could be wrong, but it's like here's an example of a little bit of misperception of the LA Rams thing. Or even the Niners thing. Who has all the commercials in TV? Baker? Baker's on a ton. Aaron Rodgers? Now, Aaron Rodgers lives in L.A. in the offseason. Baker comes out here as well. One, it's about being quarterback. It's about being quarterback and more than it's about position-wise. And then I think Eli has been on some, one because of his brother and two because of the Giants. You're also seeing Saquon Barkley, Giants. I think New York matters. I don't think L.A. matters because in L.A., you're never going to be as big as the purple and gold. Frankly, I don't think you're going to be as big as the Dodgers. L.A. has four football teams. SC is probably the most important. The Rams are a fairly close second. The more the Rams win and the more USC is a disaster and moving into the new stadium, like all those things are big, but you're talking about a 30-year gap to try and close up. Still an SC town. I don't know about that one. And the Niners don't even play in San Francisco. I think the Niners is everybody thinks Kyle Shanahan gets his guys the ball, right? That's what he thinks. Do we have another Patriots controversy? Find out next in the press.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's get to the press.
The press.
Byer, you're not a Merry Christmas. Do you randomly say Merry Christmas to people?
I wouldn't say randomly, but, you know, return the favor. Maybe walking out of a store.
You'll only say it if somebody says it to you.
Yeah. Okay. Otherwise, just carry about my business. Nobody needs to hear from me. Except right now when I give you the top stories of the day.
Fair enough.
We have more details about what's going on with the Patriots videotaping situation.
Okay, go.
But first, I want to start out with the big, big story of the day. The Nationals giving Steven Strasburg a big, big contract. 7 years, $245 million, the largest contract ever given to a Major League Baseball pitcher.
Scott Boras was at the dais there, right?
Yes,
answering
he was.
Questions with the GM. They're all at the winter meetings, which are in San Diego. San Diego. Named after the Germans, right?
Yes.
Good God.
Yes. This is how it all started, this Bengals-Patriots situation. So okay. Zach Taylor was asked this today at the Bengals presser.
Well, I'm aware that there was an incident, but I know the league is investigating it, so I've got no comment.
Now, he was asked about an allegation, that's my bad, that the Patriots were possibly filming their sideline. That was his answer to the question. Now, the NFL Network had reported that a Patriots videographer was there to shoot a behind-the-scenes piece of an advanced scout. That's not what some other reports are saying. ESPN's Diana Rossini saying that a Bengals employee was watching the cameraman who identified himself as a Robert Kraft employee. Rossini tweeted that the Bengals employee kept an eye on the video monitor that was shot the Bengals coaching staff and coaches on the sidelines for the entire first quarter. There's more, Doug. She reports that the Bengals employee then flagged media relations with Bengals security showing up. The cameraman asked if they could just delete the footage and it all be forgotten. That's according to a report from ESPN.
A win's a win.
Why would we just forget about this?
Like,
absolutely.
That reminds me of Vegas Vacation. Why don't I just kick you in the butt? We'll go back and kick you in the balls and we'll cut even, right? Yeah, not really the way it works. Then the NFL, now the NFL has the tape, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Albert Breer saying that the NFL official came in, took the SD cards from the Patriots videographer.
Okay.
We got the SD cards.
Okay.
What do you think? How do you think this ends? This ends in all of us thinking that the Patriots are doing something. Might have been the cameraman, just, I don't know. Do they really need the Bengals plays?
That's a good point. How to defend a field goal, because that's how the Bengals like to kick. And punts. Although they didn't punt a lot yesterday against the Browns. They had to settle for those field goals. But that's the latest. I think this is something that just does not go away. I mean, Doug, even if there are details, the whole Deflategate stuff you talked about a couple of weeks ago, remember, it was like we stuck on the original weighted numbers that were released. I think whatever comes out now ends up sticking with the team, even if there's maybe not as much found. But
still waiting on the findings from that PSI study.
Yes.
Absolutely.
We do have some findings on Patrick Mahomes' injured hand, a badly bruised hand, according to Andy Reid, but no broken bones. Reid said Mahomes could play this Sunday against the Broncos, even if he isn't 100%, and didn't use the badly bruised hand for an excuse as how Mahomes threw the ball in the second half of yesterday's game against the Patriots.
Yeah, Mahomes hasn't been great. I mean, look, I don't know if it's the hand or the ankle, whatever. He's taking a little bit of a beating. He was not good, and I think some of it also is the Patriots are really good on defense. Is that possible, too?
Yeah, for sure.
Possible.
With a growing injury.
Couple of key injuries to pass along. Seahawks running back Rashad Penny, going to miss the rest of the season. Torn ACL suffered last night in the loss to the Rams. Darius Geis out for the Redskins in Week 15 against the Eagles. The Niners lost starting center Weston Richburg for the season with a torn patellar tendon. Just to keep you up on the injuries.
That's a lot for the Niners.
Yeah, Richard Sherman also likely to miss Week 15 as well because of a strained hamstring. The NBA denied the Rockets' protest of their loss to the Spurs, which stemmed from a made dunk by James Harden that was ruled a miss by officials. The three officials from that game have been disciplined for misapplying the coach's challenge.
How do you discipline them? Don't ever do that again!
Huh.
Don't you ever do that again!
Huh.
They have been penalized by having to ref Cavs-Hornets games for the rest of the season.
There you go.
In the new AP College basketball poll, Louisville, number one again, followed by Kansas, newcomer Ohio State to the top five. They're at three. Maryland and Michigan round out the top five.
Maybe more interesting is I got some hate from North Carolina fans when I didn't originally have them in my Fox Sports top 10. And now North Carolina somehow is only at 17. If you weren't following Carolina this week, it was not a great week. They scored 49 against Ohio State and 47 against Virginia, both in losses. The Virginia game was on the road, though. So they've lost 3 out of 4. I don't know how they're still ranked, but...
It's like you put coal in their stocking.
Oh, no.
That's a Cole Anthony joke.
No. Oh, no.
The World Anti-Doping Agency imposed a 4-year ban on Russia from using its flag, anthem, and team names at the Olympics and other major sporting events. That includes the World Cup.
Didn't they already have that?
Yeah, this is an extension. Like, they've signed a 4-year extension to get banned. However, the athletes who are able to prove that they are clean will be able to compete under a flag of Ramos Land.
Ramos Land.
Not able to compete for Russia, but if you can prove you're clean, you can compete as a member of Ramos Land.
I had no idea Ramos Land was so prominent in Mother Russia. Why didn't the Russians get the death penalty for like the NCAA? Yeah, see?
Right.
Make them like SMU. Out,
they are eligible for the spring and summer Olympics. Yes. Spring and fall Olympics.
Yeah, the spring game. Yeah.
And finally, some sad news. Pete Freights, the former BC baseball player that inspired the Ice Bucket Challenge, unfortunately passed away of ALS at the age of 34.
Very, very sad, but obviously began something that took the world by storm and brought attention to an awful disease. Hey, get out there and press.
That was the press.
All right, so here's what I want you guys to do. This is your homework assignment, okay? I want you to come up with things that you want. And I'll come up with some things that you know, different levels of things you can afford. Joel Klatt tomorrow? Yeah. Pete Prisco tomorrow? All right, we'll talk a lot of football. I think the Giants cover tonight. It's Doug Gottlieb Show.